I want to talk about one of the reasons that I got the courage to actually start my business in the first place. And it was because of a book I read. But here's the thing. I mean, I have read tons and tons of books about business and all of that, but it had nothing to do with business. It was a totally unrelated book that inspired me to start my business. And it wasn't even a book about courage. You might think it's one about like chasing your dreams or, you know, overcoming fear and courage. It wasn't about that. So it's a really surprising that it's what gave me the courage to start, but I want to go ahead and share it with you. Have you ever wondered what it's really like behind the scenes of a multi-7-figure business? We're talking real deal, unfiltered, non-sugar-coated version. And you'd rather learn from somebody who has sold direct to consumers rather than making all their money telling other people how to do exactly what they did. Well, you're in the right place. I'm Laura, your host of Get Profitable HQ. If I can do this, starting my business as the shyest person I know and running it today with two small kids, hobbies, travel, a chronic illness, and actually a life, then I know anyone can grow a successful business. Tune in each week for value-packed content to help you feel less alone in your journey to grow your business and for practical strategies to help you get to the next level, whether that be to quickly grow revenue and profit or grow slowly and be more efficient and spend less time in your business. Now, I first want to kind of take you back to 2012, the year I started my business. Now, as I've mentioned before on this podcast and in many places, I was painfully shy, just incredibly shy, very reserved, very afraid to share my thoughts and feelings. And so the idea of starting an online business was understandably scary. However, I had been researching it for a solid 2 years, meaning reading everything I could get my hands on. This was a long time ago. So there wasn't, or at least I wasn't aware of any like courses out there or even really ebooks for how to start a blog and an online business. But there were some blogs about blogging or some bloggers that blogged about it occasionally and gave like tips. So I consumed all of that information and I even started two businesses, let's just say, that never got off the ground and never saw the light of day because I was just too terrified. The first one was called Rite Aid Rocks, and it was about Rite Aid couponing. Back in that day, I mean, couponing was a big deal, and I loved the Rite Aid deals. You could actually make money because of their program. It's not that way anymore, but I wanted to do a deal blog about it. So I started. I mean, I made the logo. I got the domain, but I was just too afraid. I was like, no one's going to read this. I'm too scared. So I abandoned that one. Then, not long after that, I took a course. This was actually the first course I ever took online about designing blogs on Blogger. I don't even know if Blogger is still around. It taught me how to design blogs, and I loved it. I loved it. I love tech stuff. I love design, and I designed my own blog. I wish I still had it. I think I still have a couple of the graphics. They're very 2012. But I designed my whole blog, and this was going to be like offering a service designing blogs for other people. So the website was there. But I never had the courage to share it. Like I just never got up the courage and I abandoned that one. So then fast forward to the end of 2012 and I wanted to start my business for real. And a few months prior, I had read a book that finally gave me the courage to start. And I felt like when I looked at other bloggers online, I often felt like, well, I could do what they could do. Like I can write, I can put together information. Back then, there wasn't that much social media, maybe Facebook, and there also was not so much video for sure. So I didn't have that hurdle to deal with, but I thought, yeah, I can totally write. I can take some pictures. I can do this. I can create these products. Like I felt like I could do that part, but the part that I felt like I couldn't do was maybe the marketing. I wasn't sure how people would find my blog. And I thought that the people who were blogging had some secret sauce that I just didn't have. I mean, they were just cooler. They were prettier. They were more successful. They had more connections with other bloggers who could shout them out and mention them. And I knew no one. So I just think I kind of felt like even if I got the courage to put it out there, it'd be kind of futile. Like, what's the point? No one's going to see it. I don't have the special sauce. So the year that I finally did start, I read a book called 10,000 Hours. And again, this has nothing to do necessarily directly with business. And I'm going to be paraphrasing and sharing my remembrance of the book that I read some 11, 12 years ago. So just know that I'm not saying that I'm saying it exactly how the book said it, or even that I understood the book correctly. I'm just saying this is what I personally took from the book that changed everything for me. I highly recommend that you read it yourself. It's not a real hard read, and that's what I would recommend that you do. But I'm going to share what ideas I took away from it. So the premise of the book, and the reason it's called 10,000 Hours, is basically that anyone from anywhere with any skill level can become an expert in their chosen field, given that they have 10,000 hours of practice. And practice has a very specific definition. It doesn't just mean spending 10,000 hours. Like, you could spend 10,000 hours watching football. That doesn't make you good at playing football. So what you do during your hours does matter. But essentially, he also kind of argued that there's really no such thing as like a true prodigy. You know how you think that some people are just naturally gifted? Like, this person is really good at singing. This person is just exceptional at golf. This person is just exceptionally smart. Many times we think that they are just born with this like special and different ability that is kind of above and beyond most people's. That's kind of the general consensus. And this book tries to argue that that isn't actually the case. Like, we essentially all have pretty similar potential when we're born, and it's all about how much practice we get. Now, I honestly don't know how much, like, if I totally believe that, although the book makes some really good points, and so I somewhat do, but that's basically the premise of the book. He even cites an example of a couple, a scientific couple, who had three girls, and they intentionally made them all chess masters at a very young age, trying to prove that indeed, with focused practice and starting young, anyone can become an expert was their goal. Essentially, now it was a very small, you know, quote unquote experiment because there was only three people, but they essentially did succeed at that, which I find fascinating. He also used the example, one of the examples that I remember the most is a Tiger Woods expert golfer, and was saying that while many people thought, okay, he just is a prodigy who has some kind of raw talent and ability that none of the rest of us have, he pointed out that he started golfing at like 18 months, like before he was two. And that's why he's so good, is because he got that practice from a very young age. So when we want to apply this to something else, what I took from that is that if I want to become really good at online marketing, blogging, running my own business, whatever you call it, at the time it was more called blogging. Nowadays, I don't think we call it that as much. It's more like online business. But I realized that if I wanted to become an expert, maybe I could if I was just willing to put in 10,000 hours. Now, that is a lot of focused practice. And with that understanding, I changed my mind from thinking these people have something special that I don't have. And I started to believe that what they had was because of their practice, because of all the time they spent in it. And that if I spent the same amount of time and the same amount of effort, I could be equally skilled. And that changed everything. Because while I didn't have necessarily a lot of things going for me, I didn't have the most like outgoing, bubbly personality. I didn't have a lot of connections. I didn't have a ton of money. I didn't have all these different things. The one thing that I did know that I had is I could work just as hard as anybody else. And I could put in those 10,000 hours. If they could, I knew I could. And that gave me the courage to realize that, hey, if I just work really hard, I can get there. And I just approached it with that kind of confidence. Like, when I was starting today, I'm not skilled, obviously, at any of this. I haven't done any practice. I've read a bunch of stuff, but I haven't tried anything. I don't have the skills. But if I start and I put in the work hour after hour after hour after hour, I will get there and I will become skilled. And that changed everything. And that's what gave me, I wouldn't even say the courage. I keep using the word courage. I did need some courage, yes, because it was like scary, especially putting yourself out, stuff out there to people that you know and be like, hey, I'm selling this thing. It was very scary. But it was also giving me the belief that it might actually work. I think before that, one of the reasons I couldn't find the courage, one of the reasons that I couldn't overcome my shyness was because I thought I would do it, it would feel really uncomfortable, and then it just wouldn't work. I wouldn't succeed. And that wasn't motivating enough. But once I realized, hey, if I work hard enough, I will actually succeed, then I was willing to endure the discomfort of putting myself out there. One thing that I want to bring up about this point is it does matter what you're doing in that time. So for example, if you're like, I want to become an excellent marketer, and you watch I don't know, let's call it 10,000 hours of course material on marketing, but you never go out and apply it, that is not what this guy calls deliberate practice. The author of this book is very clear. It has to be deliberate practice. Now, again, I think you should read the book, but essentially, practice is actually doing the thing. So not just learning about the thing, but you have to actually be doing the thing. That's one, you know, critical component. The other component is you must have ideally immediate feedback. So if you do the thing in a vacuum, like if you spent 10,000 hours writing marketing copy, but you never put it out there and never got feedback as to whether or not it was working, then that wouldn't count. So it needs to be like giving feedback so then you can make changes and adjust. And that is how you get better and become an expert in your field. And so really and truly, when it comes to the online marketing world, this is done not necessarily because someone is sitting beside you like a coach. Like say if I was playing basketball or something and I wanted to get better, I might have a coach right next to me who would like, I would play basketball for 30 minutes and then they would stop me and say, okay, here's what you did. When you wanted to shoot the basket, your hand was here on the ball and it should be here. Try that. Like they would be like looking at my performance and telling me exactly what to change. And then I wouldn't just like intellectually be like, oh, okay, that's what I should change. I would go and I would try it that way. I'd be like, okay, let's see what it feels like when I put my hand here on the ball, like those kinds of things. And so when it comes to marketing, I'm constantly putting stuff out there and its performance is the feedback. So I don't necessarily have a coach, and I'm going to get to how I do have some people like coaches and coaches, but like I don't necessarily have someone sitting there as I'm writing copy for 30 minutes, then going and looking at my copy and being like, here's what you should do, do this, do this, do this, do this. Instead, I work for a while on something, a product, copy, design. I put it out there and then it does well or it doesn't do well. And I learn from that. So the market is kind of my coach in that scenario because you're always getting feedback. And when I put out, say, a social media post, let's say I'm trying to improve my reels. And so I put out a reel and it gets 112 views. Then I will think, something about that reel did not resonate with my audience. Let me try another one. Okay, this one got 500 views. So clearly something about this reel is better than the first one. And then I, you know, try to iterate on that. And the next one gets 1500 views. Okay, clearly I did better. And then the next one might get 200. I'm like, okay, what I did here wasn't as good. So you're getting that kind of feedback from the market itself. And really, because of how fast you can get things out there in the digital world, like especially if you have digital products, there have been times when I have probably conceived of an idea on Monday and had it out there on Friday. That's not what I always do. Most often it takes us longer, but there are times when it's that fast. Like maybe you come up with a freebie idea. And if it's not that fast, it's a month or two. It's not like, okay, I have to develop this product for 3 years and we get it out there. Like you're getting really fast feedback, which is helping you become that expert level faster because you're not just putting things out there and not knowing how they're doing. You're getting that feedback. You know what you need to adjust and how to adjust. And in addition to that, I also do have a lot of coaches or people who fulfill a coaching role. So like I'm in a mastermind, I have an actual like, you know, official coach in the mastermind that I can like ask for feedback from. And she does give feedback. She does audits on pages as well. So like you'll submit a sales page and or sales copy or something like that. And she can, you know, she usually does like a Loom review. So I'll get actual feedback that way. In addition to that, I have like blogging friends that I can bounce ideas off of. And I can say, hey, I'm thinking of this strategy. What do you think of that? Like, what have I not thought of? Do you think this is a good strategy? Can you think of ways to make it better? Even my employees, in a lot of cases, are people that we kind of strategize together. And I say, hey, Tasha, what do you think of this strategy? And again, she's giving me that feedback based on her experience as well. And so that's other ways that I'm constantly getting feedback and able to continuously get better. And here's another thing about the concept that I think is critical. If you believe that this probably isn't going to work, you're not going to work as hard. You're just not. You know, if I start a project and I am like, oh my goodness, I don't think this is going to work. I don't know why I'm doing this. And especially when it comes from a place of desperation, like I got to do something. I'm not getting any traffic. I got to make some reels. I hate reels. And I make it from that place and I think they're not going to work. Then I'm not actually giving it my best effort and working as hard as I could and being as creative as I could. And then that doesn't count as deliberate practice. For it to be deliberate practice, you have to be bringing your A game and really working and really trying. And then this is also a critical piece. When something doesn't go well, you can't give up, which is something that we all have a tendency to do. So when I am like, okay, I need to do reels. And I'm using this as an example because that's something that I truly do not feel at this point in time very gifted in at all. And they're not my favorite thing. So if I was like, okay, I feel like we need to improve this, and I'm going to put out, let's say, 5 reels a week. I'm going to do one every weekday, and I'm going to do that for, I would probably set a period of time, like 3 months, and see where we are. If the first week goes by and they have not performed very well at all, then what I'm going to be tempted to do is give up and say, well, clearly I am terrible at reels, and so I'm giving up. Like, it's not fun. I don't want to keep trying. And when I come back to it next week, let's say I force myself to do it. And I've done this before where I've been like, we got to do this thing. And so I show up the next week and I'm trying to make them, but I'm like, oh, this is terrible. I'm just not bringing the same energy as I would if instead I thought, huh, I've only made like, you know, 12 reels in my life. I'm not that good at reels yet. Like, obviously I don't have a lot of practice. So of course I'm not good. So, you know, I need to make at least 200 before I can hope to really be good. And like, I'm just kind of counting that as like part of what is necessary to get better. And I'm not looking at it as like a problem or a failure. And I'm feeling this confidence that absolutely reel 25 is going to be better than one, and 100 is going to be way better than 25. Then I'm going to approach it so much differently. And that's going to pave the way for me to actually get better. And I mean, really and truly, can you imagine a scenario in which someone creates 500 reels and reel 500 is not better than reel one? Of course it will be. So having that energy is just going to help you bring your A game and the confidence that with work, you will get better. And not everything will be perfect. And I have shared many times, even on this podcast, about times that I failed pretty badly. Even later in business, when overall things were successful and going well, I still made mistakes, but I learn from every single one of those mistakes. And I probably am not going to make that same mistake again. And even it's going to make everything that I do better. And I do want to share one other book that in my head is a little bit related. I don't think most people would consider it related, but I think really goes hand in hand with this idea of putting in your time to become an expert. So there's a book by Cal Newport called Deep Work, one of my favorite books, because I just resonate with the concept so much. So basically, in the book, he argues that in our modern world, in our modern workplaces, we don't get an opportunity to do what he would define as deep work. So instead of like being in the zone, you know, deep work is when you are sitting there, it's distraction free. Like recording this podcast right now is deep work. My door is closed. I mean, for sound and also for like not disturbing, you know, having disturbances. Everything is on do not disturb. I can't be recording a podcast and having things like, you know, dinging all the time. And I'm literally talking. So it's very hard for me to be really even all that aware of other things that are happening. Like I am in the zone. We are doing the work. So something like that, where you are in the zone, you are free from interruptions, and you are free to actually do your work. That is what is considered deep work. And the thing about it is, if you aren't getting that deep work in, you will suffer. Like your work and you will suffer. Because we are kind of, in my opinion, made to do this kind of deep work. There is something just so inherently satisfying. It is satisfying to do the deep work independent of the result, but the results are also satisfying. And if you do enough deep work, it's going to be like you're going to get some good results. Like it's very hard to do it without getting good results. So deep work would also be like, I'm in the zone on writing copy. Like I'm really working on it, or I'm in the zone filming YouTube videos, or even planning content, creating content, sometimes even giving feedback on things I consider deep work, because I'll be in the zone and I'll be like, okay, I'm going through the sales page. I'm giving, you know, feedback on everything. So those are examples. And your mind works differently than if you're in like, I don't know what the opposite of deep work is, light work. I don't think he used that term, but like if you're in a state where you're just kind of sort of working on it, like, okay, I wrote a paragraph and now I'm going to look at my Slack channel, or I'm going to check Instagram, or I'm here writing, but at any moment somebody could, like, if you're in a physical office, they could literally walk in, or anything could ping on my phone and need my attention, and my attention is going to be diverted and then I'm going to go back. That type of work is not very satisfying. It doesn't feel like I really worked. And I kind of compare it to like physical work. So if you do something like physically, like for me, it's like, you know, rage cleaning. You know, you've all heard of that where you're like, okay, I'm getting this done. We are deep cleaning. I'm getting out a toothbrush and I'm cleaning every little crevice. And like, it's very physical. It's very intense and you feel accomplished. I mean, I think that's why we do things like the rage cleaning or even just a planned, you know, thorough cleaning. It's very satisfying. And if you were out, I don't know what physical work people do, like baling hay or pushing, you know, mowing the lawn, pushing the mower, you know, and that takes whatever amount of time it takes. You really feel accomplished because you really did something. Like you can feel it in your body. And I think the same is true for intellectual deep work. You really did something. You worked hard. And one quality of this deep work that Cal says is that you get in the zone and you kind of lose track of time. And I have found this to be the case very often. Another time that I get in deep work is with numbers and data. Like when I'm pulling data, even setting up tech can be pretty deep work. And when I'm pulling data and analyzing it, it's like an hour or two goes by and I don't even realize it because I'm in the zone and I just stop being aware of myself and of time and get really in the zone. And that's when the magic happens. So I think if you combine that concept with the concept of 10,000 hours, that's kind of what I feel is one ingredient of the deliberate practice of the really being able to get in the zone. So to do that, you really do have to minimize some distractions and not have your entire work times be 100% available to everyone all the time. You have to set aside some time and really get in the zone. And I think that getting in the zone takes some discipline because sometimes, I don't know why this is, I just don't feel like it. I'm like, okay, so today I need to write some copy. I don't like writing copy. I don't really want to write this copy. Let me kind of like open the document, name the document, save the document. Let me go over here and check on Slack. Does anybody, you know, and so like I kind of procrastinate. Then I don't get myself really in the zone. Versus if I'm like, you are sitting here, you are writing this copy. And one of the things that I tell myself is the first few minutes might be rough, but 90% of the time I'm able to get in the zone. On the rare occasions that I can't, often I just call it and I move on to something else. I'm like, something's going on today. We can't get in the zone. But I think that's a really critical component that I think we might be missing from a lot of us because our world is so fraught with distractions. And I honestly think we, and when I say we, I mean me, but I'm sure there's others in the same boat, are just really bad at making ourselves do stuff. Sometimes I feel like I'm practically 3 years old and I'm like, nope, I just don't want to. And like that kind of energy is not working for me versus like, I'm in charge of myself. And when I say I'm going to sit down and write, I'm going to sit down and write. Okay, then, you know, I just kind of lack some of that grit and discipline sometimes that is needed to enable myself to get in the zone. And like, I always feel good afterwards. So I feel like that's just another component that many of us, maybe not all of us, could use some work on. I know I could, so that we're able to get that deliberate practice in and that we can become the experts in our fields, which is only going to help our business. I hope you enjoyed this episode of Get Profitable HQ. If you did, don't forget to subscribe, share it with your business besties, and leave us a 5-star review on your favorite podcast app. And if you love this and can't wait to get more, I have an entire bank of resources and more behind the scenes info at getprofitablehq.com. Go ahead and head there.